everyone. It's Scott Tips again, and I've been traveling a lot, so we're getting a little bit of a late start. I just flew across the Atlantic today. I'm in France. It's November 21st, 2012. And I just had an interesting conversation in New York City in Manhattan yesterday with my friend Robert Morningstar. You may remember Robert. Robert is the gentleman who was on our program some months ago speaking about the Kennedy assassination, the JFK assassination. And he told me something interesting. Is tomorrow, I think it is, we're on the, we'll have the 49th anniversary of the assassination of Kennedy. Next year it'll be the 50th anniversary, and additional information keeps coming to light, you know, every year, it seems, maybe even every month. But Robert Morningstar was telling me that a photo that was taken at the time of the Kennedy assassination that had been suppressed for so long and actually altered and doctored, has a clear copy, has come to light. And absolutely incredible. I'm sorry, I don't, maybe I do have the information on the person who talked about it. If not, I'll mention it next time. But the essence of it is that there's a photo of Oswald standing at ground level in the doorway of the Book Depository Building, the Texas Book Depository Building in Dallas, Texas, at the very moment that Kennedy's being shot. So if that's true, if that's a true photo, how on earth could Oswald have truly been up on the fifth floor shooting Kennedy if he, there's a photo of him actually sitting there, standing there, excuse me, watching the parade go by, and at the moment it happened. Now, what they did, of course, the powers that be, is they altered the photo to get rid of it, and they actually did a little bit of a joke on the world by putting in a headshot of on the body of Fidel Castro, kind of some subliminal messages there. But Robert Morningstar was able to get the get hold of the original photo and look at it. And maybe at my next program next week, a week from today, I will get you the website and all of that for this. So in any event, let's move on. I just wanted to give you that tidbit because it was something so interesting to me. And to be honest with you, I haven't looked at the photo yet, so I don't know if this is made up or not, but I found Robert Morningstar to be a very reliable source of information. And, you know, he talks about a good number of things, some of which we'll mention next week. Sometime soon, I'll just have to get online, not even have a guest, and we'll go through all of these things. But actually, we're very lucky this time because we have this master herbalist, mistress herbalist, master herbalist, I don't know. But anyway, Vanessa Nixon Klein is with us. She's been, you should know, studying and using medicinal herbs for really almost two decades. And she has her diploma in homeopathy from the British Institute of Homeopathy and is always expanding her knowledge and is currently a student of traditional naturopathy. She has a website that I recommend you go to, which is www.herbsofgrace. What a great website name that is, Herbs of Grace, H-E-R-B-S-O-F, Grace, G-R-A-C-E.com. So herbsofgrace.com. And if you want to look at her information on homeopathy, just put a slash homeopathy slash at the end of that, and you'll go directly there. She's a mother to what she describes, and I'm sure she's right, three adorable girls, and ages 13 through 8. And she's the founder, chief formulator, and the CEO of Herbs of Grace Natural Look Mineral Makeup. And interestingly enough, just as a sideline, she does, she's a belly dance instructor, which, you know, is great exercise. But not having done it myself, I can only say from observation that that's it. But as the owner of Herbs of Grace Healing Arts, she's a natural health consultant. She goes around and she'll even go in your in your garden, in your yard, in your on your property, and tell you what herbs are good, what ones to avoid, what's super healthy, what to encourage, and so on. She lives in Washington State, in the rural part of Washington State, with her husband Brad. You know, they're girls, of course, and many small furry animals, as she puts it. Are you there, Vanessa?
I'm here, Scott. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, thank you for being on. And I was really impressed because I had seen what you had done with the going through the property of Don and Cat Carol and looking at what herbs and the like they have. Is that what you did? You did a visit?
Yes, I did. I did an herb walk on site for them, and we walked around the property, and I pointed out all of the wild medicinal plants that were growing on their property that they could use as food and medicine.
I see. And so were there some interesting things there?
Oh, of course, yes. The Northwest is very rich in medicinal plants. Of course, there's a common dandelion, which most people in our society spend a lot of time and energy trying to get rid of. But it's one of the most nutrient-dense plants that we can incorporate into our diet for food, as well as a very potent medicine. It's a great liver detoxifier. So there's plenty of dandelion. We also saw burdock, we saw yellow dock, we saw chickweed and cleavers, all just growing wild on the property.
You know what's so funny, Vanessa, is that I think it was only a couple of years ago. Of course, you've known this for much longer than I, but I heard of cleavers, and I heard of it in the context of making, steeping it in boiling water and letting my cat drink it as a liver detoxifier or a kidney detoxifier, I think it was. I'm trying to remember which now. And he actually liked it quite a bit. Is that something that you would recommend people do?
Oh, definitely. Yes, cleavers is a great detoxifier. It's a really good lymph mover. So lymph and kidneys, definitely. A lot of people will... all spring and fall, when we have cleavers in our area anyway, they will gather the cleavers and make a tea, like, as you mentioned, an infusion, and drink it. You can also use it topically. But yes, that's definitely something that I recommend. A lot of people also juice it or just add the very new leaves to their salads and soups.
Oh, so you can eat the leaves directly.
You can. With cleavers, they're pretty sticky once they become mature, but if you catch them while they're real young, they're not quite so sticky, and so they're a little bit more palatable.
Well, just to have some, and tell me if I'm wrong here, what I was told is to boil water, and then when it comes to a boil, turn it off and take a small handful of cleavers, either the sometimes they have it in powder form, other times the leaf form, but the leaf form, and dump it in there and let it steep for, and I forget now, I think it was 15 or 20 minutes, and then strain it out and let the cat or dog or whatever, or me, drink the what was strained out. Does that sound right, or am I misremembering
it? That's perfect. That's known as a water infusion or a tea, and for soft plant matter, like leaves and flowers, that's exactly what you would use. For some other herbs like dandelion root, other roots and barks and hard substances, you actually need to boil the plant material in the water for about 20 minutes to get all of the goodies out of it.
Oh, I see. Okay. And so that would maybe be a better way to do it, to boil it actually.
If it's a hard plant material like a root or a bark, but if it's the leaves or the flowers, like with the cleavers, it's the leaf, and so then you would do it just as you described.
Mm. I notice on your website, Herbs of Grace, which I have in front of me, that you also have a link to mountainroseherbs.com. Is that someone you know T terry there, I think it is?
Mountain Rose Herbs is fairly local to us here in the Northwest. They're in Eugene, Oregon. And so I definitely recommend that people get their herbs from them. They're a very reputable company.
Oh, I see. It sounds like maybe I'm thinking of another company. Maybe it was Wild Mountain Rose or something like that. It was up in it was in Alberta, or it was in Saskatchewan. I forget where. I think Alberta, actually. And there's a guy named Terry whom I did work with on labels and herbs and the like. And I was just wondering if it was the same company. I guess I should go to it and see. But it brings back memories, that name. So that was what caught my eye. Well, anyway, I really wanted to talk to you mostly about and find out and share with our audience your knowledge about herbs and how you can be protected from. And I know recently you've written an article for our magazine for the National Health Federation, Health Freedom News, an article on protecting yourself from radiation effects with herbs. Is that something you would feel good about talking about now?
Oh, yes, definitely. I'd love to talk about that.
Okay. Well, what I was wondering in particular is, in your opinion, there must be, based upon what I just said, of course, there must be natural ways to prevent or even to detoxify our bodies from radiation exposure. Is that true?
Yes, it is. And that's something that I was led to research for myself after the incident in Fukushima. I was interested in finding out ways that I could help protect my family and ways that I could share with my clients to protect themselves or to detox their bodies from radiation exposure. And so I just started doing a lot of research on it. And what I found was really encouraging, because what I found was that a lot of the things that most people who are eating healthy diets are already eating can help with that. One of the first things that I discovered was that in 1945, after the atomic bombing of Nagasaki, there was a doctor, Dr. Akizuki, who was the director of the Department of Internal Medicine at St. Francis Hospital in Nagasaki. And he fed his patients a very strict diet after the bombing. He fed them brown rice. He fed them miso and tamari soup with lots of seaweeds, pumpkin, and sea salt. And he made sure that they didn't consume any sugar. And all his staff and patients that were under his care survived, while many others who were much further away from the blast incident succumbed to the radiation. And so that's a really vital thing to think about when doing research, is to look and see what people have done in the past and what has been successful. And so those kinds of foods are readily available to most of us. And a lot of the people around the world are already eating those kinds of foods on a regular basis.
Well, that's actually an incredible story, because it sounds like a lot of it was seaweed-based. Is that right?
Correct, yes.
And so what in particular would you recommend? Say there's someone, some of our listeners or anyone they know, were exposed to radiation, or at least the possibility of it. But what exactly should they eat, seaweed-wise or food-wise? I know you just mentioned it real briefly, but I want to dwell on it a little bit so they can write it down and know. It'd be brown rice?
Brown rice, and they found that one of the reasons that brown rice is helpful is because of its high fiber and phosphorus content. Both of those things help to remove harmful toxins from the body. So brown rice, and then miso. Miso is interesting because since that time of the bombing in Nagasaki and that success story, there's been a lot of research done in Japan on miso. In 1972, the Japanese did some research that identified an active ingredient in miso called Zibacolin, and this acts as a binding agent. So it helps bind the radioactive elements from the body, and therefore, you know, make it easier to eliminate. And then in 1990, there was a study by Hiroshima University that concluded that people that eat miso soup regularly may be up to 5 times more resistant to radiation poisoning.
So it's really worth eating miso soup at Japanese restaurants or wherever. And it doesn't taste bad either. And I know a lot of times you can just pour it over the rice and have it blend in. I do that sometimes when I I eat at a Japanese restaurant. If I have the miso soup, I'll pour a little bit. Japanese do this, I know, over the rice. And it works really nicely. It makes it very, you know, tasty, actually.
It does. Mm-hmm. And it's something that you can do on a regular basis at home. It's very quick and easy to make miso soup. Also, they say that you can get twice the protection by adding the seaweeds in, so that you have the brown rice, the miso, and the seaweeds all at the same time.
Well, you know, now, Vanessa, that we have this problem with Fukushima, how do we know that the seaweed we're getting isn't already contaminated? How do we protect ourselves from that?
That's a really good question. And what I found is that most reputable companies that sell seaweed are sampling and testing all of their seaweeds to make sure that what they're selling is not radioactive. So I would highly encourage everybody who is buying seaweed to make sure that the company that they're buying from is doing that testing.
Mm, okay. Well, they usually put it on the label, say that they've tested it, and it's
okay. You know, I'm not sure how they are doing that with the labeling. I do know that the companies that I buy from will have it on their websites, and they will keep it up to date with their testing.
So, I'm sorry, Vanessa, does that mean, I'm looking at your website again right now, could I go there and find those names?
You know, I do not have a list of the names right now as far as which seaweed companies I use, but it's a list that I could get to you if you're interested.
Well, it's nice. I was just wondering if it's on your page. A lot of our listeners are in, you know, residing in the British Isles, so they'll be over there, and I'm not sure if they would get the same makeup or same companies as, say, you or others who are in North America would, but if you ever put it up on your website, that'd be great. And for those of you who just tuned in, again, we're talking with Vanessa Nixon-Klein, and her website is www.herbsofgrace.com, herbsofgrace.com. And Vanessa is an authority expert on herbs and homeopathy. So let me get back to this radiation question, though, if I may, Vanessa. Are there any other items, any other food products that you would suggest we add to our diets to aid in this process? I know you already talked about miso, brown rice, and seaweed. But what else would help protect us or from radiation or help us detoxify from radiation?
Well, there's lots of other foods and herbs that we can be incorporating into our diet. And many of them are just foods that are necessary for a healthy diet anyway, like the brassica family of foods, your broccoli, cabbage, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts. All of these are really helpful in detoxifying. Cancer researchers have found that they protect the cells from the damaging effects of radiation. Also, beta-carotene-containing plants. There was a study conducted on over 700 children after the Chernobyl incident. And they found that diets high in carotene significantly reduce DNA damage in those that were exposed to the radiation. So your carotene containing foods like sweet potatoes and pumpkins and carrots and all of the leafy greens all contain carotenes as well. Fruits like cantaloupe also. And you know, these again are foods that we all should really be consuming on a regular basis anyway.
I agree with you, and I couldn't have said it any better. We have a guest who asked a question about having had 3 months exposure to this radiation chemotherapy about 18 months ago, and it unfortunately destroyed the guest's saliva ducts and making it very difficult to eat or swallow safely. Are there any herbs you can think of, Vanessa? And I know I'm kind of throwing this at you out of the blue that would help. And would help this person.
Sure. One of the things that we think about with people who have known radiation damage and definite exposure is herbs that help the liver, because the liver is the organ of detoxification. So with liver herbs, we think about dandelion root, we think about milk thistle, and burdock root and yellow dock. These are all things that support the liver and actually help to rebuild it and help it work more efficiently. So that's one of the things I would think about first.
Okay. And so by taking these, it would help the process of healing for it seems like that'd be such extensive damage that would have been done. You know, this sounds very similar. It reminds me of my friends Dirk Pearson and Sandy Shaw. These are the people that wrote the book Life Extension back 30 years ago, actually. It came out 30 and a half years ago. And Life Extension, a Practical Scientific Approach. And Sandy Shaw, one of the two co-authors, she had had treatment for I think it's the same as this person had for saliva duct, cancer. And what she did before she got the radiation treatment, now this is a little too late for our friend, but what she had done before is she had taken a large number of antioxidants. Now, she wasn't very herbally oriented, and it's a shame she didn't know you at the time, Vanessa, because I'm sure she would have been even better protected. But I remember the doctors, she told me that the doctors had said, you're going to turn bright red from this radiation treatment of your saliva ducts, and you will lose your sense of either smell or taste. I can't remember which now, all these years later. And she took large doses of, and some of our listeners will gag at this, you probably too, but she took large doses of antioxidants, vitamin E and some others, including, believe it or not, BHT, because BHT, that butylated hydroxytoluene, which is a synthetic antioxidant usually added to foods, not so much anymore these days, it's a very strong anti-radiation ingredient. And she took that. She never turned red. Oh, she was to lose her hearing. And she was to lose her hearing immediately, and she didn't. It actually took many, many, many years, probably a couple of decades, before that really kicked in a big way. So it was amazing how she protected herself with antioxidants as well in this case. Now, I don't necessarily need you to respond to that unless you wanted to, but there's someone who's asking a question about elder tree leaves that you can use as a skin cream to protect you from sun rays. What do you say about that, Vanessa?
I know that that's been done. There are lots of other herbs that you can use topically to protect from, the sun's radiation or any other radiation topically. Interestingly, one of the most effective is St. John's wort, which we hear sometimes in the media as causing sensitivity to the sun. But when you actually use the whole plant as it's intended to be used in a cream or oil or salve form is actually very, very protective to the skin. And so I definitely recommend people to use a combination of herbs such as those to protect themselves topically.
So in that sense, are there any other herbs you'd recommend for topical application to the skin?
Well, aloe vera is one of the best. I think most people are familiar with the use for of aloe vera after sunburn. But it can help with any type of radiation burn. That's probably one of the first things that I would recommend for to topically protect or heal your skin from damage. Things like burdock leaf, as well as the elder and the St. John's wort, are very protective.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. And let me see. Sometimes we have some questions at different areas. And of course, one of our listeners is mentioning, of course, that vitamin D3 in high doses will also protect against sunburn. And that's a very correct statement. One of the things that we learned from a previous guest is that vitamin K2 is an important adjunct to vitamin D3. And I don't know, Vanessa, if you get into vitamin supplements as much as you do herbal supplements, do you? Or is that a different area that you...
I definitely do keep up on the research. My preference is to use whole foods and herbs as much as possible, but I do think for those of us that are living in northern climates, that supplementing with vitamin D3 is a very good idea.
Yeah. Well, thank you. What would you say overall for health, for just a normal person, maybe they aren't suffering from anything, but would you say would be a good range or herbs? I know it may be different for men than for women, for them to take just for ordinary day-to-day health.
That really does differ because everybody is so different in their needs. And also where they live, their climate can really change the types of herbs or foods that I would recommend. Most of the people that I work with are in the Northwest or in a temperate climate. There are lots of different things that I would recommend people do seasonally. For instance, in the spring, taking your dandelion root and your nettles on a regular basis is a really nice way to do a sort of a spring cleaning or a nice detox after the winter months. During the summers, I like to make sure that I recommend lots of, fresh berries to get the antioxidants. In the fall, it's really nice to do some really building types of herbs on a regular basis. And again, that might be some of the roots again, the burdock or the dandelion, along with maybe oat straw or alfalfa, which are loaded with lots of minerals. And then during the winter, it's nice to have something like a good elderberry syrup or elixir to have on hand when the colds and the flu viruses are going around. And all of these that can be taken regularly on a daily basis, they're tonic, so you don't have to worry about taking too much of them. You can use them on a daily basis.
Well, what I do, and you're saying that reminded me, Vanessa, maybe use myself as an example. I take stinging nettle root, being a man, I take that, and I take that, I think, pretty much daily. I also take kelp just in tablet form, although I realize it'd be better to eat it perhaps in a more natural form. And then let me think what else I take in the herbal department. I was at a place that had some Indian herbs, and I was taking the I don't have it in front of me, so now I'm forgetting, but it was like Bacopa or, if that makes sense. And it was really supposed to be good for the mind. So you can see it doesn't work, but, I was taking it a little bit. And, then what else? Just sort of mentally going through my cupboard and seeing what's in there. But I think mostly I'm taking vitamin minerals, but I do take products that are like ginkgo biloba. I will take that, and then some other like evening primrose oil at times, along with the fish oils. But of course, now I'm ranging afield from the herbs. But are there any particular? Oh, and of course, milkseed thistle. I will take that as well. So are there any others that you would suggest that I supplement with or consider supplementing with?
One of the things that I think most people could use a lot more of are probiotics. And those can be taken, as I'm sure you know, in supplement form, but just eating the probiotic foods, not only the yogurts and kefirs that some people are very familiar with, but, you know, the traditional fermented vegetables, the sauerkrauts and kimchis and all kinds of vegetables can be fermented. And they give you the, you know, millions and billions of probiotic colonies that your gut needs to be healthy. And we know that about 80% of our immune system is in the gut. And the immune system is what is going to ultimately help us to overcome all of these assaults on our bodies, including the radiation that we've been discussing.
Mm. Yeah, no, that's actually excellent advice. And it's all too often that people forget about the fermented foods and the probiotics. I know Dr. David Williams is always recommending, you know, like sauerkraut and the like, because of that, because of the fermented process, you know, the fermented nature of it helps the intestinal tract, and it helps to, like you say, increase the immune system response, because so much of our immune system response comes from the intestinal tract. So, now that makes perfect sense. The only thing about kimchi is it has such a strong smell. I remember once getting on a airline flight where the people were mostly Korean, and it smelled so badly because of the kimchi. I don't know if I almost gagged on it, but
Interestingly, I have been experimenting with some different kinds of sauerkrauts and using herbs along with vegetables in the fermented in the ferments, and I've come up with some really nice ones that people might be interested in trying. I've found that the cabbage combined with nettles, with fresh nettles, is a really nice one. Red cabbage and garlic is a great sauerkraut.
What do you mean to eat it? You will make you'll do red cabbage and garlic, and then you ferment both?
Correct. Yes. I add them both in together and ferment them together.
Mm-hmm.
I've also fermented carrots and ginger together, and that's a really tasty one as well.
Carrots and ginger. So how do you go about fermenting something like that when you do it yourself? I wouldn't even know how to go about doing that, I don't think.
Fermenting is really easy. It's actually fairly new to me, but it turns out that it's really simple. You just grate or chop up the vegetables really finely, mix in whatever herbs you're going to use or that you want in with your vegetables. And then you can use a crock, a sauerkraut fermenting crock if you have one, or you can even just use mason jars, glass jars, and just pack them in really tightly with some sea salt. And the sea salt helps to release the juices, because what you're looking for is to release the juices of the vegetables so that they can stay submerged in their own juices. And that's all you have to do is just grate them up and pound them down so that they release those juices, keep the actual vegetable pieces underneath, you know, the layer of juices. And then you cover them lightly. You can use a cloth to cover them or just a lid that's slightly cracked so that as they're producing the gases that naturally get produced during the fermentation process, that those can be released. And then you just leave it for however long you like your ferment. You can start tasting it after a week or so, but it can be left for several months.
I see. So you can just taste it and see if it's progressed enough for your own individual taste buds.
Correct, yes.
And then do you have to add a culture to the ferment, or does it just naturally ferment?
It's a wild culture. There are cultures that you can purchase and add, but you don't have to. It just uses the wild cultures that are available in your environment and creates the ferment naturally.
Well, you know, I've been known to burn water when I boil it, so I would probably turn to vinegar. How do you keep it from turning to vinegar or whatever? Or is that actually what your goal is? You want it to be vinegary?
It will just keep fermenting. And so I like to let mine go for about 2 months, and I found that that's about the flavor that I like.
Really?
But it will continue. You can, and then, you know, once you've reached the point that you want, you just put it in cold storage. So either in your refrigerator, if you have a cellar or something, and then that slows down the rate of fermentation to almost nil at that point. So then, you know, then you can enjoy your sauerkraut.
I see. Do you have to keep it in a dark place, or does it need to be where there's light?
It does not need light, no.
Okay. Well, that's pretty interesting. I'm sure that, I don't know if it's on your website. It would be nice if you had something like that on your website about your, how that, let me see if I have that. I had had your website up here a minute ago, and then I lost it, but in any event, if you did, again, for those of you joining us, this is Vanessa Nixon Klein, and she is a master herbalist and has a website, which is www.herbsofgrace.com, that I recommend you go to. And there's a lot of useful information there. Now, there's also, I won't get into it, but you also go into a lot of the natural things that women can do that won't be toxic to their skin insofar as makeup is concerned. Is that right?
Correct, yes.
Yeah, so
I have a line of all natural mineral makeup, and I have a lot of articles on the website about natural skincare.
Because those must be actually, contrary to the synthetic ones, the typical commercial products, they must actually be very nourishing for the skin, I would think.
Well, you know, minerals themselves are inert, and so they can't harbor bacteria or fungi. They're, they allow your skin to breathe, whereas most makeup will put this layer on your skin so your skin can't breathe and it blocks your pores. And so I found that the mineral makeup is really a great solution for people who are really concerned about what they put on their skin, but also for people who have very sensitive skin and can't use other products.
Well, you know, I was just in the States for several weeks, and some of the women there looked like they've been dipped in glue and dragged through a flea market. And so I would think for some of us who have to watch, see these people, and others who are, you know, actually using products like this, it's good news. So again, I recommend anyone who's interested go to Vanessa's website. But Vanessa, let me switch topics a minute and ask you about the homeopathic aspect. I know you have your degree from the British Institute of Homeopathy. Do you have any recommendations as to general homeopathic products that we could take that would help protect us from radiation, for example?
I do. One of the things I want to mention is that homeopathy, the system is very, it's designed for meeting specific needs of specific people. So it's not a system where you can make general recommendations for anybody. But there are several remedies that are specific to some of the symptoms that a lot of people have when they've been exposed to radiation, particularly the mental or emotional symptoms. One of the things that I find a lot of people need after an incident like at Fukushima is the remedy called aconite.
Aconite
mentalis. Mm-hmm. And it's a remedy that's very specific for mental shock or fright. So that's a really good one to have on hand for any sort of incident where someone finds themselves in a state of shock, but particularly as we're talking about for when there's been a big release of radiation and people are afraid that they've been exposed.
Before you move on though, Vanessa, let me interrupt you, excuse me, but when you get aconite, you know, a lot of times you go into a store, a shop that will have them. I don't care whether it's Barrett and Holland and Barrett or some other place, GNC. They have many different, or usually have at least a selection of potencies. So on the aconite, what potency would you recommend?
I usually recommend just, if I'm giving a general recommendation, I recommend the 30C. Sometimes I might go to the 200C, and those are both very commonly available. But normally a 30C is what I would recommend.
Okay. And then I'm sorry, I interrupted you. You started to give us another remedy as well.
The other one that I was going to mention is Ignatia. And Ignatia is specific for grief. Mm-hmm. Particularly the kind of grief where people experience a lot of mood changes and frequent weeping. An incident like Fukushima might be a really good time to think about using something like Ignatia. But I did want to say one of the things that I do recommend on a general basis to most people is the cell salts. I don't know if you're familiar with the Schussler cell salts. They're very similar to homeopathy. They're prepared by the homeopathic method, but instead of having to individualize the remedy so much like we do in homeopathy, the cell salts can be used more like a vitamin supplement because they're basically like micro cell foods. They're the building blocks of our cells. And there is a combination of all 12 cell salts called bioplasma. And I definitely recommend that for anybody dealing, with any kind of health condition that maybe you take a course of bioplasma for a couple of months to help feed the cells of your body and, build up your immune system.
Okay. And what about someone who might have like chronic fatigue syndrome or what they call in the UK ME? Do you have any herbs you would recommend for those people?
That is something that I kind of refrain from making general recommendations on, on conditions just because it can vary so much depending on their history and the cause and the etiology of the condition. But again, I think probably on liver clearing, liver detoxing, building up the liver as well as building the immune system that I start with, as well as digestion. So I recommend the probiotics to help rebuild the digestive system. And I would probably recommend a liver herb like a milk thistle or a dandelion. And then we might go into some immunomodulating herbs, maybe astragalus or maybe one of the medicinal mushrooms. But again, it depends on the particular situation.
I see. Yeah, I know. It's hard to say because there can be so many different causes are so many different reasons for it to exist and for it to persist. I just was wondering if there was something in general that might might be helpful, but you gave us that. I mean, some of these general adaptogens, it sounds like, might be useful for that. And astragalus, I had forgotten about astragalus, but I have a client in Northern California who sells some really good Chinese traditional herbal products, and a lot of them, not all of them, but a lot of them are based around astragalus, and he's had a lot of success and repeat customers because of that. So it's been really, really good. Well, we're getting near the end of the hour. Do you have any, there are probably things I have not asked you about that you're probably would dying to share with us. And so I was wondering if there's anything in particular.
Well, one of the things that I was going to mention when we were talking about radiation, the algaes like the spirulina and the chlorella, these are things that have been studied and have had some really good results. For instance, with spirulina, after the Chernobyl incident, the Institute of Radiation Medicine in Minsk did a study that proved that children who were exposed to radiation experienced an enhanced immune response, T cell counts, and reduced radioactivity by taking 5 grams of spirulina a day for 45 days.
Hmm.
Okay. So that's, I think, something to keep in mind. And also chlorella, it has one of the highest chlorophyll contents of any plant or algae. We found that in studies that a chlorophyll-rich diet increases the survival of animals after lethal doses of radiation. So those are some really important things to think about when we're talking about radiation detoxification and healing.
Well, I think in my case, I'm going to start upping my intake of seaweed-based products. And of course, being sure, as you had said, to be sure about the certification that it's not contaminated in some way with either radiation or whatever, and so that it's healthier. And then actually I may look into some of the other herbal products that you mentioned as well, although some of them I do take already, like the milkseed thistle, either as an extract or in kind of more herbal form, and the nettle, stinging nettle, which I take. The listeners out there, if you have any questions, now is the time to send them to me, and so I can ask Vanessa before she has to go. Vanessa, do you have a book out there? If you don't, I really recommend it, but do you have a book out there that I can refer people to?
Not yet, but I am. There are a couple that I'm working on.
Yeah. Oh, okay, good. When do you expect them out?
You know, with 3 children that I'm homeschooling and all of these other various businesses and interests that I do, I can't quite give a release date, but it'll be in the next couple of years.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for being on the program. And when you do have the book come out, please let us know, especially at the National Health Federation. We'd probably love to do a book review of it for the magazine for Health Freedom News. And for those of you out there, if you're a member of the National Health Federation, you'll be able to see Vanessa Nixon Klein's article that's upcoming in the next issue. And keep in mind, too, that Vanessa has a blog. You can go to the blog and you can see a lot of very useful information there. So again, I want to give all of you her website, which is www.herbsofgrace.com. Really great name. And a lot of our listeners out there are saying, thank you, Vanessa. And I really appreciate your time and everything on this. So please stay in touch. We'll also want probably more articles from you on tapping into your great herbal knowledge. And I really thank you for this. So
thank you so much, Scott. I appreciate your time as well.
Okay. Thank you. And for those listeners out there who are going to stay tuned, Sean McGuire is up next. And we have a show next week. We'll have a guest, and the guest, quite honestly, I think it's Dr. Cannell, if I'm not mistaken. I have to check my calendar and see, but this is the Vitamin D guy with the VitaminDCouncil.com. So I thank you all for staying tuned in, for bearing with me, because today was my journey day, flying from New York to France. And in any event, I'll be back in a week with Dr. John Cannell with the Vitamin D Council .com, .org. He'll have a lot of interesting stuff on herbs, but I think we got a lot of useful and very helpful information courtesy of Vanessa Nixon Klein. And all right, so I'm signing off, and thank you, everyone. And please stay tuned for the irrepressible Sean McGuire.